You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Drs. Ruthie Lindberg and Justin Jornigan about their experiences with raising a young family while being equine practitioners and practice owners. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Ruthie Lindberg is the owner of Pinewood Equine, a two-doctor equine ambulatory practice in southern New Jersey, which focuses on providing the highest quality care on the farm, with an emphasis on client education and customer service. Dr. Lindberg graduated from the University of Pennsylvania in 2014 and completed her internship at Rhinebeck Equine. Following her internship, she worked as an associate in general equine practice for several years before opening her own practice in 2019. She's passionate about finding creative solutions for veterinarians to find success in equine practice. She's married with two young children, ages 3 years and the other 6 months. Dr. Justin Jornigan grew up in North Carolina, where his interest in veterinary medicine started in childhood, raising chickens, pigs, goats, and spending many hours with his horses. He spent many summers working with his mentor, Dr. Jeffrey Schutz, the founder of Foothills Mobile Veterinary Service. Dr. Jornigan attended North Carolina State University in Raleigh for both his undergraduate and veterinary degrees. In 2013, he became the sole owner of his mentor's practice. He opened a Holland clinic facility in 2020 and more recently a companion animal facility. Foothills Animal Hospital is now a three-doctor practice that serves all the different species residing in the community. Dr. Jornigan is married and has two small children, one 2 years old and one 5 months. Welcome, Drs. Lindberg and Jornigan.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I'm so glad to have you. You both own busy, growing practices, yet you and your spouses have successfully found a way to have children and make them a central part of your lives and be practice owners and work as veterinarians. Tell us how you navigate that. Ruthie, let's start with you.
Sure. So I think that there are a couple different facets to that question about how I navigate that on both a logistical level and then I think on a psychological level. So on the logistical level, I give a lot of credit to my husband. He's a teacher, so his schedule is very conducive to childcare. So he's often our point person when it comes to, like, if our three-year-old gets sick at school, he works on the same, at the same school, just on the high school campus, you know, part of the campus where she is in preschool. So that helps on a logistical level. So I give my husband a lot of credit on the logistical side of things when it comes to childcare pickup. And then other things on the logistical level, I end my day a little bit earlier than I used to. I probably start my day a little bit later than I used to and just do a little bit less in my practice in favor of raising children right now. And then I think more importantly on the psychological level, how I navigate that is I have to lean into letting go of perfectionism and embracing the good enough mindset that I'm not going to be a super mom and make like homemade brownies for my kids' Valentine's Day class party, but I can buy a bag of clementines at the grocery store. And I can show up when I need to show up or in my practice, you know, I wish that our social media was more engaged with our clients, that our quarterly newsletter went out quarterly instead of annually, if I'm lucky. But everyone's taken care of. The patients are taken care of. The kids are taken care of. And the house is messier than I want it to be right now, but it is good enough.
Yeah, I think you're talking about perfectionism is so important because we all have this like ideal way we want things to be. Like the house is always clean, the dishes are always done, the newsletter goes out on time, the invoice, you know, like, you know, but life and kids don't have that perfectionism. They just are who they are. And when they need something, they need it now. You know, they depend on us, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Justin?
Yeah, I think that's so true what you said there about kids not being that way. I found that to be a fun part of being a dad is they loosen me up a little bit. You know, they're not so structured and rigid, and you know, they're just happy to, you know, carry around a marker lid. And that's enough, or play with an old cardboard box. And we've really, in many ways, probably made life a little more complicated than it needs to be. You know, some days I navigate things well, and other days I fail miserably. The key things for me, you know, I get to see my kids so little. You know, they may be awake for maybe 30 minutes before I leave for the day. You know, when I'm home, bedtime is, we're doing baths at 7 o'clock and usually, you know, headed to bed by 8. And so realistically, I've probably got 2, maybe 3 hours at the end of the day. And So I do everything in my power to finish my day on time and get home. You know, there's things I've got to do in the mornings. I go feed the horses at the barn before I go to the clinic, and then, you know, I usually get them on the way back home. I'll clean stalls and turn them out. And good weather days, you know, my wife and kids will meet me at the barn. And so, you know, throw one in the stroller, the other one's carrying hay string around and just, you know, toddling around and, you know, petting her pony. And that's, you know, that's one way that we can get something done, but we're all there in whatever mood we might all be in, but we're all there. And hopefully that's part of their core memories. But I think parenthood has made me become more efficient at work. I do not drag it home. My notes are done before I leave, or they'll be done when I get back there the next day. And my administrative time for payroll and, you know, checks writing and all the stuff that goes with being a business owner, it just gets worked into my schedule. So I do that during my work hours. Now I might do it at a home office, but there's dedicated time for it. I make some dedicated time quarterly to dig at some of the normal report stuff that we like to look at, but I try really hard not to blur the lines between work and dad, and or dad and husband. My wife she is a superwoman, and she has by choice decided that she wants to stay at home. I'm not wired that way. You know, I love my kids dearly, but by the end of the weekend, I'm ready to go kiss the floors of the clinic. I'm ready to get back to work. And so
is she trained as a veterinarian?
Yeah. She has a master's in animal science, reproductive physiology. So she helped run the clinic, for, you know, the first 10 years.
You miss her now.
terribly, but, that's what she's chosen.
There's some weekend emergencies calls that are very welcome.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it's it doesn't make you a bad parent if you're listening and you hear it. It doesn't. You know, it's just my wife is a superhuman, and of course everybody has their limits. I'm partly joking, but she wanted, you know, it's important to her to spend the first couple of years of our kids' lives with them, and so we've done what we can do to make that happen. But in some regard, when I get home, I feel like I've got to tag in, you know, like, what can I do? Because she's been doing it all day. And in my brain, I'm going, well, I would be at the edge of the limits of, you know, of safety to being around kids at the end of the day. You know, and for her, it's just, you know, so it puts a little bit of pressure. I feel like I put the pressure on myself, like, all right, like, how can I help? What can we do to get dinner going and, you know, dry tears and move along with eating. And so it's a balance, but I think so much of it is rethinking how I did practice before kids, and then really kind of an exercise in efficiency. And if you want to do something, you can make time to do it. As impossible as it seems so much when we're busy, especially in the spring rush of the year.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
You know, there's an expression about kids: the days are long, but the years are short.
Yeah, we have a mug that says that.
Yeah, from my perspective, that was very true. You know?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they're in first grade, and then all of a sudden they're in middle school, and then they're graduating from high school, and it goes by like a flash. So I really, you know, I applaud you for leaning into that, you know.
Justin, I think so many of us are perfection. You know, you're talking about perfectionism. We want to be perfect. Like, if you want to be a veterinarian, you've got to be an empathetic perfectionist. That just seems to be the way it goes. And so we're really hard on ourselves, and, you know, and our culture, you know, with social media and other.
An equine practitioner, business owner, you know, I think some of the letting go of things is, you know, really backing off on my schedule, and just saying, you know, we're just booked, you know, 3-4 weeks out, and that's that. Yeah. Right.
That's the full sentence.
You don't have to service every horse in the county, you know.
That's right. And two, you know, I've got an associate veterinarian who has a young child. I've got two technicians who have children under 3 years old. And so I totally get it, you know, when daycare calls and they've got, you know, hand, foot, mouth or high fevers or whatever it is. And, I think that's that having kids has really changed that, and how I manage that too is we kind of live by the philosophy of family first, like in every single way, culture of our practice. So, you know, technicians, they'll come say, hey, my daughter is really sick, and like, I hate to do this, and like, just go take care of your babies. Right. Like, the rest of this we'll figure out, you know, we'll prioritize and we'll shift. And, so it's just, we know what flag we fly under, and families first at the clinic, and our staff are our family too. So we just put them first and put their families first.
I'll bet that was in your mind when your son was born, because he had a few medical issues, and you and your wife, like, tell us a little bit about that. Like, how, as a practice owner, what was that like for you?
Sure. I don't mind to dispel, you know, a quick little synopsis of what happened with us, but our second child was a scheduled term C-section with no indication of anything being wrong. So we went in for that, and he was born, and of course, I'd already spoke to the neonatologist about his daughter who rides horses. They had already shaken me down for the horse knowledge, and the anesthesiologist was an animal lover, but nonetheless, my son was born and with a condition we didn't know about called Pierre-Robin sequence, where his lower jaw was underdeveloped and the base of his tongue occluded his airway. So when he was born, and he also has a cleft hard and soft palate. So when he was born, when they brought him, he appeared to do well. And when they brought him over to my wife to lay him on her, he completely desaturated, and she's laying there in the OR, and he's blue, and it looks like someone's kicked an anthill. They whisk him away, and then we spent the next 2 months in the NICU, going through surgeries to elongate his jaw, and keeping his airway guarded, learning how to eat and breathe, and those sorts of things, just completely something not planned for. And so it's the first time in my adult life that I've had to test my support system, where you really figure out, I think I very much in our community or church and otherwise, we tend to be the helpers, the ones chipping in and trying to, fundraise for this or that, or cook a meal or help or give someone relief. And it's the first time in my adult life that I've needed help. And incredible fashion, my staff just stepped up. I'm going logistically, who's going to, the level 5 NICU they sent us to is 2 hours away from the farm. And we've got a 2-year-old daughter. It's November, headed into the holidays. Who's going to feed the horses? Who's going to take care of my dog? Who's going to keep my wife's crotchety old cat? All those things, I can submit payroll from afar, and those are the things that you worry about. And is my house going to be safe? Somebody looking after it and that kind of thing. So that really, it's been eye opening to see that family first thing be thrown right back at me.
But being the recipient. Yeah. Of like as a veterinarian, being the giver and the being the recipient, I'd imagine was different and amazing and heartwarming and
I've always been one of those people that can't take a compliment, self-deprecating. So it was incredibly humbling. Church community taking up love offerings and things, we had to find short-term rental. It's quite expensive, find some place that we could stay together as a family, for the holidays. So it was really quite incredible. My son's doing incredibly well. He's got one more surgery to repair his cleft palate coming up in September. But we were amazed. I had an internal medicine faculty member that I had as a professor at NC State give me a call in the hospital in those early days, had heard. And, there's lots of support for mothers of NICU babies, but dads are sometimes, there's not a whole lot there for them. And there is, it's just a much, much smaller.
It's different,
right? It is different. But he reached out he has a son who's now 16, and they've spent the better part of the first part of his life traveling the country. He was in NICU for a long time for a very odd cardiac abnormality, and he just reached out, as a friend, as somebody who's been the dad in NICU trying to sort out all the things. And I was just incredibly humbled just to, hear somebody who has walked those shoes, but also wears the veterinarian's hat and has the same kind of mind when you're listening to rounds at a teaching university talking about your child and being part of that. So
I think that's a really important message too for, dads that are going through this, that if you have gone through this ever, that if you hear of another veterinarian dad, that you reach out to them, because what a difference it can make, So Ruthie, what's been your biggest challenge with having two small children and running a practice, and your greatest joy too with doing it all?
I would say my biggest challenge, and we've kind of touched on it or danced around it, is just and it's probably true for any full-time working parent in a demanding profession, is just there's not enough hours in the day. There's not enough hours in the day for all the things that I would like to get done. And you just have to prioritize sometimes on a day-to-day basis. And sometimes, parenting wins out for those hours, and sometimes the practice wins out for those hours, and trying to balance that and stay sane is a real challenge.
Well, I mean, because we want to be the perfect mother or the perfect father. We want to be the perfect boss. We want to be the perfect veterinarian. We want to be the perfect spouse. We want to take care of ourselves, go running, wash our hair, all of these things, plus call your mother or remember your friend's birthday. All of these things you're trying to be perfect at.
Yes, and I think it's just dealing with the sense that, that you could be doing better at so many different things if you just had a little bit
more time
to dedicate to it. And, that just sense of that has been very challenging, more than any just sort of logistical hurdle to manage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then my greatest joy, I think currently, my 3-year-old is at the point where she can, she's a little more engaged in what's going on. And I've been able to really bring her with me to select calls this spring. We have a client who breeds a handful of mares and foals out a handful of foals. And those mares keep foaling on Saturday nights. So every Sunday, I've been going to do a new foal exam every weekend. And she's come along with me to look at she loves going to see the mommy horse and the baby horse, mommy horses and the baby horses. And, I do doing some mare checks while I'm there. And she takes her job very seriously of wheeling my ultrasound cart. And she wears one single exam glove while she does it. It's really important to her. And so she wheels my cart in the barn, and she has a chair that she sits in to watch. And she starts to, she's really starting to ask a lot of questions. She's very inquisitive and mom, why do you need that long glove? What are you doing with that long glove? Why do you think I need that long glove? And she goes, so you don't get poop on you.
Yeah.
And I say, that's exactly right. And it just cracks me up. It's so funny. It's a very unique experience.
Yeah. And sometimes your experience is so similar to mine when, I was going to breeding farms through the weekend and I would take the boys with me. I remember once when they were 3 and 5. And I tried to park them in the office of the barn, with coloring, you know, crayons and stuff, because a foal had died overnight.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going to do a necropsy on it in the stall, right? And I'm, you know, doing that. And the three-year-old says, "Mommy, are you hurting that baby?"
Oh, God.
And then the five-year-old says, "Mommy, is that the small intestine?" So, yeah, it's kind of fun. It's kind of
like,
fun.
Oh, yes, I'm really proud of you saying that, actually. But
I love that. It reminded me of there was a young brother and a sister. We were there to euthanize an old horse. It had cancer. The young girl was really attached to it. And she was probably seven. Little brother was probably, you know, five. And you know, we put the horse down and invited sister over to come over and sit and pet. And she's upset. And brother got a little upset when sister was. And then just out of nowhere, he pauses and he says, "So when does all the hair fall off and you have the bones?" And his dad's looking at it, because you're thinking, gosh, serial killer in the making. And the dad's like, "He's really into skeletons right now."
Oh, that's a good one. I like that. Yeah. I like that story. So what about you, Justin, with your sort of greatest challenge and greatest joy?
Yeah. It is so hard, and it's probably not just with parenthood, but just in general, just the way society and the world is right now, but to just be present where I'm at, is just hard. And there are days that you're just having a hard time doing it, you know, and you're, mm-hmm. when you're rushing home for those, just a couple, you know, couple of really good hours, but the day's really just been terrible, or you've you've had a communication issue, you've had an ill client, you've had multiple euthanasias, whatever it is. And getting home and you really like, I really just need 30 minutes, maybe a glass of bourbon, and just to just, you know, just check out. Right. Just yeah. to just not be needed for just, yes. for just mm-hmm. a little bit. And there's that pull, you know, the pull of, you know, I really need to help my wife. I really need to, you know, entertain them and give her a few minutes or whatever. So it's just that constant taking care of yourself, trying to father and to husband. And so,
it is a paradox, because you're taking care of yourself when you have that limited time, when you just need 30 minutes and maybe a glass of bourbon to have, because you need not to be needed for 30 minutes. And yet you're such a good man. You're thinking, "Oh God, my poor wife, she's been home with them all day. She needs not to be needed right now."
Yeah, exactly.
And putting other people first.
It's tough. So we get creative about it. But I think the key, and Ruth, you hit it too. Like, we're very blessed to have partners, spouses that we're mm-hmm. raising children with, and God bless single parents. What a challenging thing to navigate. But so much is it, I can communicate to that, my wife, you know, later in the afternoon, like, "Hey, this afternoon, it's just been really rough. You know, maybe I just need to clean stalls by myself today. And hey, I might be an hour at the barn today before I get home," and just really try to, I still have a lot of world problems cleaning stalls in the afternoon.
I love so cleaning stalls.
It's so like instantly gratifying, but mm-hmm. But yeah, that's really challenging, because I really prioritize my own mental health, and every student that comes in my truck, they know, you know, I've been in therapy every 2 weeks. You know, that's accountability to me. You know, I have absolutely mm-hmm. nothing to talk about. Standing appointment every 2 weeks that, you know, I'm going to just chat and work through whatever has been accumulating. Mm-hmm. So that's prioritizing, keeping in check with my own check engine light and so that I'm able to do what I value, and help how I can. That's the challenge. But the joy, very similar to you, Ruthie, is I love seeing my kids explore a little bit of what I love, mm-hmm. And I like watching them explore the things that they, try and like too. But spring is always so fun with babies, around, and we usually got a foal and a mare somewhere and a stall this time of the year. And my daughter, my staff, they adore my kids as their own. And Quinn is always up front with Miss Dawn, dumping out all of her pens and highlighters. And she's recently into carrying the microchip scanner around and, going beep, beep to all the dogs that are in the clinic. And it's just, I like to have them at the barn and just, kind of come along for the ride of, what mom and I do, for fun and around the farm. And so it's just fun to watch them figure things out and just brings a little more excitement to life. The things that are dull in adulthood, they've got questions and get into mischief that makes it fun again. So.
Yeah. I think that's just the general joy of having children, is rediscovering the world through their eyes around you,
Yeah, definitely. I agree wholeheartedly. Is there any other thing that you'd like to share with our listeners or any advice for, leaning into the young children thing? How about you, Justin?
Yeah, I mentor a lot of students, senior students come for rotations and things. And that's something that comes up a good bit, folks that, a lot of young women that have that question of, gosh, I want kids. And, when's the right time, and how do you navigate that? And it's one of those things that it's a very personal decision. And there's some folks that have no interest in kids and I respect that as well. If it's something that you wholeheartedly believe that you want that experience of parenting a child and, you can make that happen. I think it's something I tell them, when you're interviewing at places, snoop deep and see if you can get a good feel of, are there associates at the practice that have had children? Does the owner have children? Does anybody have young children? And ask, what did that look like when, you had your child? How much time did you have off? And, or is there flexibility for my schedule if I want to, catch T-ball practice a night of the week or do a dance recital or whatever? Those are fair questions and things to ask when you're riding shotgun with somebody on a working interview. There's all sorts of practices out there that, that facilitate that.
Some that don't.
Yeah. And there's plenty that don't. That's going to be very, very challenging for the ones that don't, because the dynamics are changing. The folks are graduating. Majority are young women and at a time in their life that they might like to start a family. And this is part of that cultural change. I'm very fortunate to be in a position that I can make that happen at my practice. I've got an associate now who needs to be done by 4 every day to get her kid from from daycare because her husband, you know, can't. And, so, you know, instead of her working 3.5 days a week that she was, she just works 1 hour less a day. And so she gets off early every day to get her kit. That's an easy ask. Doesn't right. affect her production. She controls her own schedule. Like, who cares? Easy win, you know? So just ways of being flexible is what but I really encourage folks that if parenting is something that you think you want to experience, that don't for a second think that there's not a way to do that in equine practice. There's a lot of us out here making it happen.
Yeah, I think you just have to choose wisely, just like you just described.
Yeah.
What about you, Ruthie? Anything you'd like to leave our listeners with? A final message?
Yes, I'd like to echo what Justin's saying about, and in fact, even argue that equine practice in many ways can lend itself to having and raising children. You know, there's, especially in solo practice, in small practice, there's a certain amount of agility and flexibility and autonomy that you have to control your schedule and make parenting work for you, even more so than maybe in like a small animal practice where you have to be there until the sign on the door says closed. Or, you know, some people, I think, automatically, especially, you know, students, young practitioners, think that large practices are automatically the way to go if you want children, because you're sharing the burden of practice. And there are some large practices that can do that successfully and emphasize that and are very family friendly. But there are also large practices that have, you know, a lot of rigidity necessitated in a large practice in their structure that actually can make it more challenging, or just don't have the culture to facilitate, you know, having children. And so I think if you're in equine practice and you want to have kids, that there's a way to make it happen. Might not be the situation that you're currently in, but you can, you know, think creatively to find a solution that keeps you in equine practice along with and helps you reach your family goals at the same time.
I think that's really wise advice, you know, both to choose wisely when you're taking a job, but also keep your mind open to the other possibilities, because I certainly see a lot of people who have chosen to have their own solo practice, so they get to make the rules and they get to work the way that they want to work. So that's also another option. Thank you guys so much, Dr. Jornigan, Dr. Lindberg. It was great having you with us today and hearing your stories. They're so funny. When's the hair going to fall off? There's just going to be bones. And why are you wearing that sleeve? Why do you need that sleeve on your arm? Oh, and thank all of you listeners for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave. Embrace change.